Hello and welcome to the podcast for episode 116, the season finale of the first season of Outlander. I'm Ronald D. Moore, executive producer and developer of the Outlander series, and I'm joined this time by my co-writer of this episode, Iris Stephen Bear.
Hello, and it's exciting to both come to the end of what was a long season, but it was also, it's going to make me smile when I see our names together.
Yes.
On the writing credit.
That's been a while.
Yes, indeed.
Do we have a joint writing credit on the old show, on Star Trek?
Well, we did stuff together, but I don't know if we, only with other people, like yesterday's Enterprise and the Tribble show,
yeah.
But nothing like this. It's taken only 25 years to get to this moment.
To get to here.
So yes, my PTSD is going to come back while watching this, being on the set and going through all of this.
It's strange to be doing the podcast now. We are in Cumbernauld at the studios as we do this recording, and we're 2 days away from starting production on season two, and now we're going back to the end of season one and doing the podcast. So it's a little out of space, out of time for us.
Oh, memories.
Oh, yes.
There you go.
There's the time. There it is. Very nice. Wow. Long time coming. All right, well, structurally, this episode didn't change radically in from early story to final draft. This opening sequence of the escape attempt, of the escape from Wentworth Prison, the first draft was much longer and more extended. It was easily twice as long. Played some more action with sentries standing up on the ramparts, watching the ceremony, you know, in the courtyard. And we actually saw the Highlanders outside and the cows and how they snuck in. And the whole sequence just kind of got collapsed for time and for production budget to a much more abbreviated sort of version of the escape.
Yes, that's when I was sick. I missed that whole opening, all the action in the courtyard was shot the day I was home sick. So it was interesting to watch it. I felt kind of bad, even though there was no dialogue that day. It was just a lot of running around. And this scene, the reveal of Blackjack and them together on the cot took a lot of thought, and how much blood we were going to see and what the hand was going to look like and whether or not we were going to see any genitals.
Yeah.
And but that was that decision.
Yep. I mean, we made the choice fairly early on about telling the balance of this story in flashback. For those of you that know the book, the whole story of Jamie's experience with Jack Randall in Wentworth was told in flashback, but much, much later. They escaped to France, and it was in the Abbey and the recovery, and that was all flashback. For the structure here, we thought, let's pick up in real time with where Jack and Jamie are during just moments before the rescue, and hold everything else as true flashback once we get to our version of the Abbey in Scotland.
We had some discussion on this because I think that if the cattle hadn't come through and this escape attempt did not happen, Blackjack would have given him the honorable death. I think he would have completed his part of the bargain.
Yeah, he was going to uphold his end of the contract, which I thought was important. I think that did say something important about the characters. Both of them, both that Jamie's trust was not misplaced and that Jack was willing to fulfill it.
And throughout this shoot, Sam, I mean, he was very serious. He seemed totally cool most of the time with everything that was happening. But it was definitely wearing on him. And as each day went by, you could just feel what it was taking out of him. And the crew was reacting to that. We were all reacting to that. You could feel the weight of the episode on everyone except for Tobias. Tobias was like the total pro. It was like, what do you want me to do? Okay. As soon as they yelled cut, you know, Tobias was just chatty and talking, and everyone else was literally in tears.
Wow.
the hair and makeup people, the women were crying at times. I kid you not, there were tears. So we missed all this. This was shot second unit.
Yeah, the cows.
And this was happening while we were filming other things.
I saw rehearsals on this, because we constructed that section of corridor. You saw the cows come down. It was a separate stage built specifically for the cows to run down. The walls were reinforced. We had the cows come and rehearse.
Yep.
We built it sort of like a big racetrack, so they would run down the hall, then turn the corner, and then they were shuttled all the way back to the beginning of the corridor, and we ran them through it several times.
And there was one Outlander, whose name I will not mention, who was very uncomfortable and very hesitant to be with the cattle.
Really?
In the corridor. He was fearing the worst. But no one, no cow or human was injured.
Yes.
During the making of this episode.
But there were great stakes later. No. There was a tremendous amount of long, tedious discussions about how we were going to get these cows to work. You know, in the book, it's kind of, Diana kind of skipped over some of the details of how the cows got in, how they got out, exactly how this all went down. So we had to, like, we were laying out maps of Wentworth and figuring what level they came in on and where's Jack and Jamie and how Claire got open the door. And it was a lot of, like, trying to work through intricacies of literally just shoe leather plot.
And it's so funny because we talk about it now and we smile about it. But if I remember now just how we'd come into my office, we'd sit there and go, how did it happen? How do we figure this out?
What did Jack think? And where was he looking? And how did he get knocked down by the cows? But he's not, you know.
Yeah, it was not a lot of fun at the time until you actually figure it out.
And again, the cows behaved perfectly.
Yep.
Everyone was afraid of the cows and what they were going to do. They would go rampaging through the studio yeah. if we weren't careful. But the cows were pros.
This was a long day, but everyone did really well. You know, anytime you have horses, and Grant had to keep the horses still, and there's a moment that's kind of disturbing. There's a moment, I think, where, yeah, Duncan had to get from the horse onto the cart, and that took some time. Not that it took some time, but it was a kind of hinky moment, but he actually did it quite well, and then we didn't use it, I realized.
Oh, yeah, we didn't use it. Yeah, you see him getting back on his horse. Now, those of you who know the book, I mean, in the book, they escaped to France, and after they cross the English Channel, the abbey is actually a French abbey, and it all takes place as a long recovery and the whole sort of rehabilitation of Jamie, and all that takes place across the sea. When I initially looked at the order, I remember at the beginning, I thought we weren't going to play the abbey at all. I said, let's do the escape, and we'll save the aftermath and Jamie's rehabilitation for the first episode of season two. But the deeper we got into it, the more we started feeling like, no, we should deal with the consequences of what happened with him and Jack. And then I felt like, well, let's keep the abbey in Scotland so that there's still a sense of jeopardy, there's still a sense of threat, like they still haven't escaped, they're not free yet, so that all the conversations between Claire and Jamie throughout are still have this sort of shadow hanging over them, that they still haven't made it to safety, so that the end can still be sort of, and now we're free.
And I remember looking at this set while we were filming things in the prison cell, and how we were all waiting to be done with the cell so we could shoot in this set and just be done with everything in the prison cell.
Get out of that cell.
Oh my God.
This is also a set. We built this. The Abbey room here is actually built on our sound stages. And the exterior of the Abbey, I don't remember where you guys shot that. I wasn't there for that.
Yeah, it was a fabulous location.
I don't know what it was even.
It was some kind of there was a little church within the building where they had some pews set up. That's something if we had done our homework. We could now tell them.
We could now tell them.
We could tell these fans who are listening so intently.
But we're coming out of tone meetings for episode 201, so we're just bear with us. We're doing the best we can.
It's late afternoon.
Yes.
It's been raining all day.
It's raining in Scotland.
And it's been meeting upon meeting. Yeah, and now we're back, and there was a whole bunch of talk about putting the rats on Richard Ashton and whether what that would be like. And he was so cool about it. He said, "Yeah, put the rats on me. I'm fine. I won't move. Trust me." And he never did. It was amazing. He had lots of rats on him for a very long time, for very little screen time.
He's a trooper.
Yep.
Now, obviously, the core of this episode is all these scenes between Jack and Jamie in the prison cell, and sort of outlining, you know, that relationship and what happened and sort of the horror of it and what's the key idea and what's Jack after and what does Jamie give up. This was a very difficult episode, in my opinion. This was, initially, I was going to write this one, and I literally got to this scene. I was writing in script, and I remember just not getting it and trying over and over again to try to make the scene work and try to figure out where the Jamie and Jack, and I remember calling you and just saying, "I'm stuck, you gotta help me, we're gonna have to write this together because I don't know where I'm going here," and then handed it back to you, and then you cracked most of these scenes.
Yeah.
In truth, most of the Jack, the vast, basically all the Jack Jamie scenes in the episode, you cracked, and then from that point we kind of like polished them and wheedled them together after that. But yeah, I was a little bit adrift in how to do this.
Yes, besides the fact that you were tired and it was the end of a long season, but you had written pages and pages and pages and just refused to get to this. It was like, yeah, you were avoiding it. You were avoiding all these scenes.
All this banter between the two of them.
I kept waiting, looking, going, so when does this happen? And yeah, it was just not there.
To the meat of it.
So yeah, that was a...
And it's odd. It's odd. You know, not off... I don't know. There aren't many times I've felt that way where I sort of just could not figure it out, couldn't find my way through it.
Well, yeah, I had certainly written enough Blackjack Randall at that time. And, what I kept saying it to myself and when I was doing it was, you have to think of this, you know, if this was a woman who was being abused, How would it be written? You have to really go for it. You can't make it TV. You got to make it really uncomfortable because it's pretty horrible. And just because it's this strapping Highlander, this very masculine guy, you know, it doesn't matter. He's being taken advantage of. And it has to be painful to watch, you know.
And that was the quality I looked for when we were editing it later, was what's the point where it's hard for me to keep watching the show? And that was always sort of the line to try to hold, was to make it right up to the point where I don't want to watch it anymore, but to keep it at that level and to not shy, because if you shied away from it, then you were cheating the story and cheating the truth of what really happened.
And what Tobias did, and what I knew Tobias could do, they had a tough time with this moment. I hate to interrupt myself, but they really didn't want to play this moment. And I felt strongly that that we had to go there, and... We didn't want to dance around it, and it made everyone uncomfortable. And again, they were troopers, and they went for everything that we asked of them. But believe it or not, this what you're watching now took the most conversation.
This thing, yeah. I mean, can't say enough about the cast here. This is hard, difficult stuff to do, and they were fearless. I mean, they really, it's being very vulnerable in a profoundly intimate way on a stage with a lot of people around, and these guys just went for it, and they didn't shy away from it. They were willing to, like, tackle this.
And I felt it really important to keep Blackjack honest. I mean, he's a very disturbed individual, but if... And, you know, obviously the editing, we talked about that in the last episode. Anything where we felt that it tipped that character over, you cut. You know, you kept, you know, that sociopathic quality that he has. But he never went into, like, pure mustache-twirling villainy.
And this moment changed a bit in editing. This was actually a longer sequence, but as we were going through the editing, I kind of felt like I wanted there to be a more dangerous, sudden moment here from Blackjack that really sort of expressed the violence and the danger of where we were.
And, you know, as with every scene, you have to do it more than once. So it was... It was... really difficult to
to be setups you have to do for this.
Yep.
It's like, my God.
And you see that there's a concentration that Sam has to keep throughout this episode. He has to go to that place in his head that I'm sure was not easy. And, you know, people were tiptoeing around him a lot during these two episodes. And, you know, he was talking to people. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't, like, keeping to himself. But there were one or two places when he walked off the set where I said, nope. I'm not going to talk to him right now. He needs to get out of that head.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's some actors that they stay in a certain place throughout the shoot, and there's other actors, as soon as it's cut, they're just back to themselves. This sequence of Claire mending the hand, a lot of this, is, as I recall, is drawn from the book. There was a lot of description of how she mended his broken hand and set the bones and pulled back the skin and all that. And I think we drew extensively on that. And we also had technical advisors. We had nurses, a nurse on set, as I recall. And so all this was vetted. So if there's mistakes, it ain't for want of trying, trust me.
And I have to say, even though it's all movie magic and we know it's not real, even watching it in the video village and watching those shots, it's kind of difficult.
Yeah, it's hard to watch the needle going into even what you know is rubber skin.
I guess it's good if you're gonna live the life that Jamie lives, which is filled with physical pain. It's nice to be married to a healer.
Yeah, it's useful. I like the way this thing looks. It looks appropriately crude and just something they slap together.
Yeah.
I really like that. It gives it a sense of authenticity to it.
Was that props and costume or both?
I think it's one of those gray areas where I think both props, costumes, prosthetics all have to kind of like jointly construct these things.
I know you would see the hand, people walking around with the phony hand all the time, this absolutely ugly, bloody hand. Waiting to bring it onto the set.
You notice that Claire is in her juggler outfit through this whole sequence. I think that was Terry's idea, the costume designer. I think she had wanted to put Claire into the juggler outfit just to sort of return her to the idea of World War II, of combat nurse, of seeing her in, you know, officially in that sort of nurse role in these early sections.
Then there was the question of what would the audience who hadn't read the book, what would they glean from the sickness?
Yeah.
Would they know? Would they suspect? Is it nerves? Is it just stress? Or is it something else?
That's a little day for night on the location. It's
definitely.
Now, this scene floated around a lot. This wasn't even scripted in this place or shot. This was actually going to be much later in the episode. This went in and out of the script several times. It went in and out of the cut several times. Ultimately, we kept it in. It was important to Diana, who wrote the episode. And, you know, we all kind of, like, kept grappling with whether this scene belonged in the show. And it was always a question of, well, why is it in the show? How is it helping Claire or hurting Claire? Or what's it? What's the change in the character that happens to Claire as a result of this scene with the priest? And I think ultimately we kept it in and moved it to this point because it felt like once she had healed Jamie's hand and she had gotten that out of her head and she had at least stabilized him and now he's going to heal physically, that there was a moment there of spiritual reflection where she would sort of wonder where she was in the world and then, you know, was she right with God and all the things that had happened throughout the entire season. This felt like the moment that maybe she could express that and go to confession.
I just want to say this was a very dark set. It was upstairs, and the one time I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, I had been outside talking to someone about something, hopefully about the show, something important, and then I ran upstairs for one of these takes, and it was really dark, trust me, and I went from outside to inside, and I walked right into this low bench, this huge bang on my shin, and everyone looked at me. It's like, oh shit, it's the producer on the set. It's like, what the f-? You know, it was terrible. It was that moment of, okay, sorry, don't mind me, I'm just in agony, but, you know, go back to what you were doing. It pretty much happens once a year. You're bound, if you spend enough time on the set, you're going to get in someone's way. Especially in the cell, Meryl and I were always dodging because it was so tight in there and there were so many people. It's like you have to be there. You're watching the scenes, you're watching the shot, and yet the cameraman, the operator, the gaffer, someone is trying to get through for some important reason, and it's like, okay,
we'll move someplace else. So dark. When the few times I wasn't able to come down to the set very often on the cell days, but it was so dark when you walked into that soundstage. I had to stop for a minute and let my eyes adjust just to navigate my way to the set.
That's what I did not do here. Did not wait for my eyes to adjust. I thought this was a lovely moment. I think it's a surprise. You expect. He looks so severe. He looks like such a fire and brimstone man of God.
Yeah, you think he's the next Father Bane or something.
Exactly.
You know, dig out and call her a witch or whatever. And I remember when I read the book, this chapter, I mean, there was something charming about the idea that his reaction was, it's a miracle, it's miraculous, it's amazing, which was, no one else would say had said that.
Yeah, I was concerned whether it would translate from the book page to the stage. But it's actually quite nice, and it's a nice scene for Claire, who's just going through so much.
It's interesting that it's affirmative of faith,
right,
of her faith, as opposed to just, you know, denigrating it or saying that faith is worthless. You know, it's especially in TV terms, it's not often when you have a scene where it's like it's affirmative of your faith and, you know, you will be healed, and it's actually a good thing that she goes to the ritual and participates once again in the church.
Well, both of us were lucky enough. In both of us together in Deep Space Nine, and I know in Battlestar, being in that science fiction realm, we did a lot of stuff about faith and belief in religion that we got away with because it was science fiction. And in a way, you know, you could do it here also, because it's a period piece. It's not as fraught as it is today. If you're doing a contemporary piece, then you're really making a statement that people have to be right. And after this episode, this gentleman did join a monastery because they looked at him. And he's a poster boy. He looks like a monk.
Well, once you shaved his head like that.
Yeah, it was like, what else?
You might as well. This scene was a little bit longer. We had a little bit more with the guys and Duncan. Oh, and actually, there was a whole other sequence here. Initially, there was the redcoats would arrive at the gates of the monastery. We had the Highlanders up on the walls
with their
pistols
weapons.
And their weapons, you know, holding their breaths. Are we going to have to shoot it out here? Is this going to be like the end of Butch and Sundance? What are we going to do? The redcoats came to the gate. Father Anselm went down, he talked him out of it, the redcoats finally went away. But it was like a brush with danger we had in this sequence initially. But again, time, money, expense, and just cut it down to just touching base with the guys.
And this became, you know, an interesting scene. It's entirely in Gaelic, and it's not translated. And it goes on for, I don't know, a minute and a half or something. But, you know, I think you get the core idea that...
Yeah. I never see anybody do this kind of thing. And that I was really attracted to playing this whole scene without subtitles. Yes, we've now embraced Jamie's point of view. Theoretically, you could put subtitles on this. But there was just something about the power of watching them talk in their language and not knowing, but getting it anyway and understanding that I was attracted to. You know, and sometimes you just feel like, yeah, why not? Let's try this.
The actors were nervous about it. They did a lot of rehearsal. I watched them.
They were nervous about the scene?
Oh, yeah. All that Gaelic. They were standing outside by the sound stages going over it again and again, the two of them. Yeah, they did quite well.
Have we reached your limit? I mean, now he's getting into the core of what's going on here. You know, Randall's had his moment, but what's he really after? What's he really after? It's not just sexual pleasure. It's not just beating him down. What does he really want from this man? What's been at the core of, you know, 3 or 4 years that he's been thinking about Jamie?
Obsessing
about him.
I'm sure once this airs, we'll find out. Someone will find something that's relevant to these episodes. But I cannot think of a television lead male character who has gone through what Jamie goes through. Trial by fire.
Yeah, I don't know what the reference would be either. This is just not a place you take your hero.
I mean, we would never have thought of it if it wasn't in the book. I mean, you're not thinking that this is where you're going to go for your season finale. You know, it's...
It was one of the great things about the book. The first time I read it, I was so surprised. I had no idea this is where it was going to go. And it was just kind of shocking and provocative and yet worked. And it was a remarkable story from the beginning.
I mean, even if you reversed it and it was a woman in television, you wouldn't take any woman to this level either.
You wouldn't go this distance with it.
Right. Oh, yes. We had much conversation about this.
Oh, right.
What this branding was going to look like, and could you read the letters?
In the book, he brands him with his signet ring, but we didn't have Jack wearing a signet ring on the show, so we were sort of forced to think of something else. So we started thinking about a seal that he would use and, you know, to seal letters with. And then it became, beyond the prop question of it, it became, well, what does it mean? What does it symbolize? What is he trying to get out of this moment? And we kind of felt that this was a key turning point of Jamie's willingness to brand himself at Jack's command, was really a surrender on some level, but not the ultimate surrender, really. Because even here, Jack tells him to brand himself up there, and Jamie does it in a different spot, in sort of the last gasp of defiance.
If it was the signet ring, I don't know how he would have got it into the brazier anyway. With his little pinky, he would have had it. Yeah. It's very hot.
That would be it.
You know, he asks Jamie if he reached his limit, but you wonder, what's Blackjack's limit?
Yeah.
Where is Blackjack's limit? He doesn't...
Yeah, what's his line? Does he have a line? There used to be another subplot here. There was another subplot where you follow Claire and I think Murtaugh into the village. They negotiated with a captain to get the passage to France on the ship. They were in a tavern, and then there was a whole element from the book that we cut ultimately. Although we scripted it at an early point, it was Murtaugh and Claire go to the tavern. They book passage on a ship, and then on their way back, they have an encounter with a passing redcoat patrol. Murtaugh kills one of the redcoats. The other or is fighting one of the redcoats. Rather, Claire chases after the other guy. She kills him. And she has to, like, she wounds him, and then eventually she chases him down, and she has to physically kill him with her bare hands, and he's a young boy. And then that was part of the sin that she carried back to the monastery and had to confess of ultimately to Father Anselm. Again, it was interesting stuff, and a lot of it was in the book, but it was so much screen time, and we were fighting money and production and locations and action, and it was just one of the elements that ultimately had to go. So this is really, it was in this section where you see Claire welcoming, or they're all waiting for Willie to come back and just saying, basically, he's found a ship.
Yeah, otherwise it would have been tonight on a very special episode.
A two-hour episode.
And I really appreciate this moment too, because I'm a big fan of Willie. Willie was a character at the beginning of the season who was in, who was out. We didn't know. He was just the name. We didn't know if we were going to have him. At one point, we were cutting him out of the show completely. And then, luckily, he developed into a very specific character. He's the not only young, but he's religious, and that's why he's the one who went and found this place for them. And it's, you know, of all people to ask to help him to kill himself, it's most disturbing that it would be Willie.
Yeah, especially since Willie's been the first guy to stand up when they asked to go rescue Claire, when they asked to go rescue Jamie. It's always Willie that comes to, you know, steps up first.
Well, we know Willie is deeply, secretly in love with
He's
Claire.
He's secretly in love with Claire. And actually, if Jamie was out of the way, that wouldn't be such a bad thing.
She likes younger men.
She does.
Give it to me. I won't.
This was a tricky piece of editing. I think we had ADR, because this used to be in a different section of the script.
Yep.
And what they were talking about was slightly different. So this had to be worked over a few times in post. If you ever got hold of the original script, which I know some of you will, you will see that the scene reads very differently on the page. I really liked the way the Murtaugh-Claire relationship developed over the season, especially obviously after 14.
Yep.
They've had quite a journey from the beginning. where he was telling her about Leary in private, and it's always been this really interesting dynamic between these two characters that I really like. There's something about these two actors that work well against each other as well.
Yeah, well, they both have a gravitas that I think is interesting, and the great thing about it is we don't have to push it. You know, you don't have to keep hitting it. It's just there. The actors bring it, and that's always lovely. I remember when we started the season and about how Murtaugh was not going to speak and he wasn't going to have any emotion, or, you know, kind of like in the book where he's... But there's more to Murtaugh than meets the eye, obviously, and it took... You know, we developed it over the season, I think, in a nice way. Obviously, 14 was the big breakthrough.
A lot of that has to do with Duncan, because it's one of those circumstances when you're watching things in dailies and you're watching them in the cut, and the writers, you start wanting to write more scenes for him, you start wanting to play more scenes with him, because you realize the actor's giving you something, you can really expand on the character. So it's one of the joys of television. When you're working on it, you start seeing things on screen, and then you start carving the show, you know, in that way.
Duncan was one of those amazing moments when I watched his audition, which was a self-tape.
Was it? I don't remember that.
Yep. And I, that face, the beard he had, the way he delivered the lines, it was like a complete no-brainer. I'm serious. It doesn't happen often, but it was like, that guy's going to be Murtaugh, or I'm going to know the reason why.
Yeah, I'll know the reason why.
Because we had seen a lot of actors. It wasn't like he was the first guy, but it was just another audition. But as soon as he came on, there was something there. I didn't know, I hadn't seen Duncan's work before. It wasn't like I knew him or anything like that, but it was just like immediate. Man, and then there was some talk he was too tall, or was, you know, Murtaugh's short, and it was short, like, are you kidding me? This guy is Murtaugh.
Now, this took a lot of conversation, a lot of work. This whole, the oil of lavender, mm-hmm. which was in the book, is a key idea, that the smell, you know, brought him back into that place, and the Claire, you know, used it deliberately, but how it was going to work in our context. Because in the book, this all took place in like there was an underground spring, and there was water, that we knew there was no way we were going to get these characters in anything remotely like a pool or a spa or a water. There was just no way. So you had to play it differently, which kind of changes the context of everything.
Then why can't you look at me?
Look at me.
Yeah, we rehearsed this ahead of time. Talked it over. There was a lot of talk about this.
Yeah, because this is the moment. This is the cathartic moment. How is this going to be realized? So then the brand, again, back to the brand that leads you to the truth.
Didn't we have it? We changed it, right? Mm-hmm. Originally,
it was all about the brand.
Right.
And then we changed it that the brand just sort of opened the conversation with Jamie.
Right.
And it moves to the place where it was about the fact that he enjoyed it on
yes,
some level.
That was the big thing. It was asked backwards. We had it. And then, yes.
That there was a moment in this sort of, he's being tortured, he's being hurt, and there's a moment in time where just the physical sensation allowed him to feel something of comfort, and then he feels guilty about that.
Well, which was, number one, incredibly brave about Sam, but it also shows that in writing, you have to be prepared. You know, it just seemed at the time that the brand seemed like such an important moment, because the idea of being branded with someone else's initials, but it was wrong. That's not the end. The true revelation is the story that he's about to tell. nah, the opposite way, Story and then Brand.
It was how he felt.
Yeah.
It wasn't the action, it was the feeling that then he got to.
A lot of talk about the bruising, how many bruises he would have, and where they would be, and where the blood would be. We had more. We had meetings about blood. It was so bizarre to have like a blood meeting and a wound meeting.
Be on your schedule. Blood meeting at 2:15.
Yeah.
I remember, was it Tobias's idea or was your idea that he pours the bucket of water over his head? That sort of. You know, Randall, Jamie waking up to that image.
I don't recall, but I'll give it to Tobias. I'm not sure. All I kept thinking was, what about Corporal Hawkins from earlier in the season? Is this just something, you know, because Blackjack has such a, he knows what he's doing in these situations. I can't believe this is by any means the first time, and I'm wondering what poor Corporal Hawkins went through.
What happened to Corporal Hawkins? I remember... The actors and the director have been by themselves in rehearsal for quite a bit of time, and they brought us down to watch the rehearsal. And they rehearsed the entire storyline, all the Jack Jamie scenes. They rehearsed chronologically, you know, they played them all through. And I remember watching the scene and sitting there and going, "Oh man, wow, this is like, we're going to do this. This is really, I've never seen this. I've never thought we were really going to be able to do something like this." It was really sort of amazing that these guys were going here.
I know they were. When I wrote this stuff, it was like I had no idea whether how much of it we were obviously actually going to do.
Right, what you would actually do.
What we were actually going to do, but it was disturbing to me. And I just felt you just had to keep not topping it in like a bad way, but in topping it in like who when he lets his hair down. This is just so.
That's the thing. And I remember they had that in the rehearsal, letting the hair down and letting the hair drift in Jamie's face, and sort of, you know, evoking the idea of Claire in this moment.
I mean, without getting too deeply into it, he, you know, earlier in the episode, he wants him to forget Claire, and he, you know, say he's the only one there with him. There's no more Claire, so that he could become Claire for him. It's just. I remember at some point during this something, there was some glitch or something, and I remember we had to do it another time when we thought we were done, and it was like, oh God, Sam, poor Sam, he's going to have to go through this and just kind of find that moment, and you could see that he's got his arm, you know,
it's pulling Jack,
he's black him. Pulling Jack into him. It's just and this was the line, if I like the other line from 15 about dead flesh, this was line that I knew we had something. How can she ever forgive you? I mean, I know. Ouch.
That's so painful and profound.
And you know,
just
in terms of season two, that's something to remember.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's something true. To remember.
That's true.
Because that does, that has not left his head.
Yeah.
That was
that's
a
true.
That was a tiny little
yeah, an inside the writer's room for season two.
Yeah,
yeah, we gotta remember that.
There's nothing to forgive.
I mean, the thing to remember is this is not the 21st century, you know, or the 20th century for those of you who remember it. This is he's a Highlander from, you know, the mid 1700s, and yes they you know, some of them might have had intimate relations with farmyard animals, but this is slightly different. This is a tough thing, you know. He was a virgin when he's married. This is just so tough. Even when I just think it all through in my mind, the character has so much to come back from. So much to come back from.
So many ideas of his own masculinity, obviously, but also his own sense of truth and power and strength and what he thinks his limits are, and discovering that you have a limit, and a character who thought he, on some level, he kind of thought he didn't have a limit.
I mean, just a few episodes ago, he was trying to discover what it was like to be the Laird at Lollybrook.
Yeah.
You know, what
just
that,
still on the most basic boy taking over father's role.
Exactly.
Be done. Have your soul as well. Mine.
This was, again, I'll be honest, I'll say, in terms of like the crew and everyone, watching this was not as, nothing was as difficult as The Cell. But this was also, it was like, this was the last thing we shot in this set. And it was, by that point, it was like, we have to get this over with. This is the longest week of shooting.
Because it's the end of an incredibly long production.
Well, that's the other thing. Good to remind us.
Fatigue. That everyone felt, especially that lady there. I mean, she had worked every scene every day for so long and still had to bring it in a scene like this.
By the way, the last day of filming of principal photography was the cart when they came back.
That was the end. One?
That was the end. When they bring Jamie back. Mm-hmm. Though we had pickups and all kind of things after that.
Various inserts.
But, you know, it's a season of television. I don't want to oversell it or anything like that. But for the long 200-plus days that we shot, this was just an incredible emotional ending to go through for everyone.
Yeah,
for
the
everyone.
Entire production.
Oh shit, then we had this too. Ouch.
This is like painful to watch.
Ugh.
And then I made them reshoot the insert of the flesh hitting the fire a couple of times.
Oh,
I spent hours with the VFX guys saying that doesn't look like flesh burning in the fire. It was just like one of those things that tortures you when you just want to be done with the episode already.
Oh man.
This shot was redone I don't know how many times. I still hate it. And you know what's nice is when you finally get to this shot of the coast, it's like, oh, I can get out of this darkness and these claustrophobic spaces.
We were very aware, I was very aware that we weren't going to see some of these characters for a long time.
Right.
And I was going to miss them. We were all going to miss them. Angus, Rupert, Willie. And I really wanted to give everyone a final kind of goodbye. And I showed the relationships and try to give them something, you know, a kind of nice little period to their to this season that they had done such fantastic work.
Yeah, I thought it was important to like give a moment to say goodbye to these people.
You may kiss me au revoir.
Stephen, I miss Stephen.
He just goes for it. He's just like, I may not get this chance again. Yeah, that's so great.
And then look there, and then Rupert steps up, and he's got a bit of a gallant little streak in him. Who knew? I think it's just to show up his buddy.
I know.
But
I
still.
Love the fact that it's, he still shows. It's like, see, that's how you do it.
That's how you take it. Piss off
a lot. Piss off.
Yeah, it's fun when, you know, you can write some character humor in these dark shows. Angus doesn't. He does. He's
what?
Just...
Oh.
He's just...
Yeah, you know.
And I spoke to the director about this because some reason, it's just my Willy thing. I wanted, you know, I know he's not, you know, I mean, he's not Angus and Rupert, but
he was the last guy.
He's the last guy standing. He's standing there watching. The others, you know, these are men, and they used to be saying goodbye, but he's just left there watching.
And he leads with his heart.
Yep.
He always has.
It's kind of like my friend Ron.
This is a real ship.
You want to talk about this ship?
They had a ship. It breaks my heart. I didn't get to go on this
None
ship.
None of us got to go on it.
They only had so many crew, and they were only willing to allow so many of us from the production to get on the ship. So I didn't. My company's got Tall Ship Production, and I couldn't even get on the tall ship or really play around on it as much as I really, really wanted to.
Yes, we were all just like, we could not believe it. We could not believe that that ship was leaving without us.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we found out that it turned out to be the most miserable day. There was one toilet. It was broken. Yeah. The actors had no food. It was just...
It was miserable.
Miserable. But it's, I remember standing on the dock watching that ship and just imagining the most fantastic things. I'm walking back and forth going, what's going on? It must be... And basically everyone just had to really pee really bad.
Yeah, it just,
and I had no idea. I was so jealous.
What are we to do first?
Now, this is a setup for what we are now wrestling with and what we're now about to film. You know, back then it all was theory, but this idea of...
Every word in this last scene we have analyzed. Okay, what exactly did they say to each other? And what did that possibly mean? Who knows what when they land in France? Yes, we've gone back to the scene many times. Like, okay, what the hell did we do like 6 months ago?
And Duncan, who was out all day, gave me no end of shit about the fact that... He's just basically there for the final shot. For the final shot.
Hey, you're in the shot.
You know, he was like, you know, I'm there to take my pose, he goes.
This is hard, shooting something like this out on the water. There's continuity errors. The wind goes from one side to the other. Claire's hair is wafting one direction, then it's the other direction. But you know what? Go ask Steven Spielberg how hard it is to shoot something on the water. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, this was a day the actors long remembered. But he's a resilient man, Jamie Fraser.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not there by any means, but the fact that he's standing and...
Something else.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Changing the future. Been wondering how to tell you this. Nurse assures me that once you're underway, you'll be too seasick to have a conversation. I'm pregnant.
But...
It's amazing. Somehow this episode ends on such a moment of uplift that you really, your heart just sings and you're so happy after all this stuff. Somehow this scene and this moment, I'm pregnant and he's happy and we're about to cut to this glorious big shot, and somehow it just fills your heart with joy after this horrible, harrowing journey that you've been through.
I totally, totally agree. And what is amazing and what I find that we're so lucky about is, again, if this was a contemporary show, there'd be problems that we'd be discussing. But in this, there he is. Thank you, Duncan. But it really is. It's like it's a new beginning. You know, there's going to be problems, and they're carrying their past with them, as we'll find out, in a lot of different ways. But look at that. That's just...
It's all 100% real. This is a real ship. We're on a helicopter. They shot this. There's no CGI involved in any of this.
And, you know, we at one point talked about a different ending, but this is a brilliantly beautiful...
This is the
hopeful
end of a season.
Yes, a long season.
Yeah, a long season. And there you go. And that is Outlander Season 1.
Congratulations, my friend.
Congratulations, my friend. Wow, what a journey.
Indeed.
Wow. Well, thank you all for listening to us. Thank you all for watching the whole season. And we will see you again in 2016, boys and girls.
You bet.
Good night and good luck.